is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The Cold War of the 20th century, replete with provocations, challenges, accidents, near catastrophes. But here we are in the 21st century, and history doesn't repeat, the wise man says. It rhymes. United Nations, Reuters, September 22nd, right now. NATO allies accused Russia at the United Nations on Monday of violating the alliance's airspace in Estonia and Poland, actions that Britain said risk triggering an armed conflict. Confronting Russia at a meeting of the United Nations Security Council, British Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper said, "Your reckless actions risk direct armed confrontation between NATO and Russia. Our alliance is defensive, but be under no illusion, we stand ready to defend NATO's skies and NATO's territory." I welcome a veteran of NATO and the U.S. Air Force, General Blaine Holt, United States Air Force retired, and the author and force and narrator of a new podcast I welcome, speaking of much in the coming months, Dangerous Intellectuals, launched now with a narration by the host about the intentions of the podcast. Right now, however, we're plunging into the front line between NATO and Russia. You will recall that Russia has made clear through the voice of Vladimir Putin for years that he's at war with NATO, not Ukraine, NATO, NATO provoked, NATO drive, NATO threat. And therefore, NATO is now talking back. General, a very good day to you. Congratulations for your podcast. We'll speak of that in a moment. But your understanding of Brussels right now, these sharp words at the UN, what can we say is going on in Brussels to direct air defenses along the frontier? We've had the 20 drones reported in Poland. We've had three MiG-31s reported in Estonia. We have Poland scrambling their air wings in some fashion in response to what was said to be a bombing raid by Russia into Ukraine. What does it look like to you, General? Good evening to you, Blaine.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be with you. But these events are getting very serious, and I see them as escalatory. Here's the thing. We've got to make sure that when we make assertions, that we are double and triple backed up with the facts. It's troubling to me that there's already murky water surrounding the MiG-31 incursion into Estonian airspace. The Estonians themselves released flight maps to show the routes of flight, and they weren't in Estonian airspace. That doesn't mean there wasn't an incursion. It means you got to have your story straight if you're going to make allegations of this type. And here's why. Because when you have military forces, two nuclear bodies, NATO and Russia, now with their aircraft getting into close proximity with one another, perhaps the Russians doing probing missions, looking at what NATO's got for air policing and interceptors, and then the NATO forces coming right up on the border to check the Russians and to make sure that there's no incursions. You have the opportunity for miscalculation. You have the opportunity for very young people who are with a high stress level, who don't want to make the wrong decision, but they've got seconds to make that decision. And then if you overlay that with the rhetoric at the UN in Brussels and the war drums all over, then we've got a very lethal cocktail that we know all too well that we tried to avoid in the Cold War from coming to its bad place.
Looking at the Estonia incident, isolating three MiG-31s, what is a MiG-31? Is this their top rated? Why do they use it?
Yep. So it's not their top rated one. The one we did not want to see was the Su-35 or aircraft in that generation. This is a very old fighter. It goes back to its first production run in 1974. Its current model edition is called the MiG-31i model, and it came off the assembly line last in 1996 before they shut it all down. But why that jet is concerning is its capability set. We know full well it can carry their brand new Kinzhal hypersonics missile that is conventional or nuclear capable. And I believe that that's the message that that Moscow is sending, is our air forces are really quite capable. And I believe they sent the older aircraft in because we know that if they're going to take an attack plan, they're certainly not going to start with MiG-31s.
Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, the Baltic states, conquered several times in the last century by Russia or its allies, momentary allies and adversaries. I'm thinking of the Germans. But in any event, we're looking at countries that are built out of ruin, built out of regret, built out of fear. And those countries include Estonia, the capital of which used to have a prime minister named Kaja Kallas. Recognize the name?
Yes, I do.
The foreign policy director at the NATO. So we're looking at choosing Estonia perhaps purposefully. Estonia is a little bitty country. It's all online, very sophisticated workforce. It's backed up by Kaliningrad, which is Russia. To the north is the Baltic Sea. To the east is the vast Russian heartland. All of that suggests that they chose Estonia because you go after the easy mark. Is that a correct assumption, General, that they didn't do this in Poland because Poland might shoot?
Yes, that's probably very true. But I think there's more that's zeroing in on Kaja Kallas. She has been beating the war drums from the EU louder than anybody and screaming from the highest rafters that there should be no dialogue between Europe and Russia. And so that message is being sent in that direction. The other part that we should understand is while Estonia can boast no formidable military capability, what they lack in normal weaponry, they more than make up for in cyber offensive capabilities, and Russia full well knows that. And so Estonia now has become a stalwart and a foundational brick in the NATO cabinetry in terms of cyber weapons. And so I think it's that combination and avoiding the Polish, who are more than ready for a fight with Russia, to start there. But this is all message sending. I just would caution everybody who's watching this that the Russians aren't starting World War III with a few MiGs and a dog named Rex. They're certainly not going to do it with styrofoam drones cruising over Belarus and into Poland.
Yes, the Russians are at war with NATO. Recall that. Even though it is a fiction from our point of view, from their point of view, the Russian nation is repeatedly told every day, the advertising at the bus stops, we're at war with NATO. NATO means to keep coming until we stop them. That is the narrative. So we return to the remarks at the United Nations. For example, the foreign minister of Ukraine, a strong response means that a threat should not be escorted, neither for 12 minutes nor for 1 minute. It should be neutralized. Meaning Estonia, open fire. Michael Walls, the United Nations ambassador from the United States, you will recall he was momentarily in the early days of the Trump administration, the national security advisor, former member of Congress. This is his first appearance on the floor of the UN General Assembly. And he said, I want to take this opportunity to repeat and to emphasize the United States and our allies will defend every inch of NATO territory. Now we go to the Russian side, the deputy ambassador, Polyansky. We won't be partaking in this theater of the absurd. When you decide that you want to engage in a serious discussion about European security, about the fate of our common continent, about how to make this continent prosperous and secure for everybody, we'll be ready. Blaine, these guys are doing a good job of being the Cold War. How do they sound to you?
It's got a very 1985 feel to it, if you ask my opinion. The rhetoric, and it's unfortunate that this week is the UN General Assembly, because we're probably going to hear even more alarming sound bites that folks are trying to make. And again, I think that if you look at it through President Trump's eyes, he's looking for de-escalation ramps. He's not looking to amp up the tension or the stress that we see as Russia presses its military advantage in Ukraine right now. You know, it's important to remember that before you decide that we're going to go after those Russians once and for all, that they are the most modernized and most quantity laden nuclear force in the world. And their hypersonics is currently leading the world. And so while we certainly have military capabilities in NATO and the United States to deter Russia, I would argue that our best weapons are economic ones, not through sanctions, but through access to bring them back into the world commons. They're not doing so well with their best buddies in China right now, who have their own problems. And so there are non-military ways to get at this. And I find, as a general who's been to war for nearly my entire career, that the non-military approach is a much more reasonable one than seeing how close we can draw ourselves to that nuclear flashpoint without crossing it.
A couple of details, General, and I hope I don't tread in the territory I shouldn't ask, but can either side tell whether the aircraft are armed or not? Is that something you can read a surveillance?
It's difficult, but there are sensors that we can find out what might be on board that package. It's just, it's not a science that is ultimately reliable, and it's not something that we can determine with a high confidence. So that gets you back to the miscalculation place, right, where if you see a fleet of Su-35s coming across, then you have to assume what their intent is. It's really the composition of aircraft, the composition of forces, and how they're maneuvering that gives away their intent. That's how they betray their intent. And then, of course, we have signals monitoring in all domains, including space, where we try to put a picture together. But there again, once you have a fighter and another fighter from two different countries in the same space, you're asking two 30-year-olds to figure out, is this the big one or not the big one? And we saw things in our history, like with K-19, the submarine from the Soviet side, where we got very, very close to the brink and didn't know how close we really were until much later on. And so, again, I'm hopeful that we start to find rooms to have back channel talks in rather than looking for the nearest New York Times reporter.
All right. When the NATO gives the order to scramble the Dutch F-35s to the Polish drone incident, or the F-16s from Poland up, or the Spanish surveillance craft that happened after the drones, do they all get a briefing saying no hair triggers, back off, ask for orders? What are they told when they're launched?
So this is what we call the NATO air policing mission. And one of the benefits, if you will, from our time in Afghanistan with NATO is our interoperability amongst air forces is really, really quite good. And we train to those standards still. And so there are rules of engagement that they are very firm with in their training to prevent miscalculation. And so we have all the best laden plans in the world, and you have a great air policing interoperable force. But all of that won't avert a bad afternoon if you have one. And so, but I would say that to everything that NATO can do to avoid a miscalculation, they have absolutely taken those steps.
I'm speaking to General Blaine Holden, United States Air Force retired, and the last posting, my understanding of chronology, was at NATO before he skipped over Washington and landed in out west where glory is. And when we come back, Blaine is launching a new podcast. And I'm compelled by the title of the podcast to ask who? Dangerous Intellectuals. Podcast number one is up right now. When we come back, stories from Blaine Holt. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.